It's another Friday afternoon and you are listening to The Sod Show. I am Peter Donegan, of course, and I know you know that. Okay, let's get to the nice bits. How you get in touch at Sod Show on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSodShow and sodshow.com for the entire back catalogue. I want to touch just briefly on last week's show, because last week's was a double episode. And it was recorded live at Dublin Castle. Ron Finley was there, and also Dublin City architect Ali Grehan, and the very wonderful gentleman that is Fergus McGarvey. Ladies, gentlemen, to you who turned up, etc. And also the beautiful team at Bloom Fringe, and the guests who stood on stage beside me who told their stories. Thank you so much. It was a real genuine honour. But it kind of touched on, I guess, a social, inverted commas, social issue kind of side of it, or how do you, yeah. It was horticulture, and it was about gardens, and it was about open spaces and all that, but it was also a little bit about when things don't kind of go according to plan. Is that a fair way to put that? I apologise if I've got that a little bit wrong, but I think that kind of sums it up. It's really well worth listening to. And yeah. Okay, so, but to today's one, it's entirely different, which is as the Sod Show should be, because on today's one we talk with Sophie Le Guill. And Sophie works with Plant Heritage in the UK. And so where it gets technical at the intro is where Sophie mentions a genus and species. And that, I guess, can be a little bit daunting when you hear like big words like Ascalus hippocastanum, and that's the genus and that's the species, and then you kind of go, oh, for God's sake, and you kind of maybe put just, yeah, let's go listen to some, you know, Led Zepp or something, and that's entirely understandable. But don't get confused, because as only Peter can do, yep, I literally have it all explained with my oddball, non-intentional analogies, waffling, as some people may call that, Jane. But nonetheless, it's explained for you, and it's worthwhile. And the gas thing is of all of the groups and societies and bits and bobs which can be involved in, this one actually physically gives you something in return. That's like, you know, I don't know, me saying, I'll give you 10 quid, and you go, well, I'll give you cake, and I go, boom, okay, hey, this is a great exchange. That's the level that we're at, where a lot of them, to be fair, I'm generalising there, you kind of just give the £10 and you become a member. Well, this one goes a stage further. It gives you a photosynthetic equivalent of cake. See, I just used another big word to show that I'm really intelligent. Really intelligent at waffling. Photosynthetic, process by which plants make their own food. For those of you who are not aware, I tell you something. If we are playing charades, not Cluedo, what's the other one with the letters? Scrabble. Yeah, you'd fall in love with me straight away. There'd be women on the far side of the dinner table with glasses of champagne going, who's your man with all the long words? Pity we don't use the Americanized variation of photosynthesize, in which case it could be done with a Z, and I'd probably get double whammy letters there. Yeah, all right, that's too much babbling. To today's show, Sophie Le Guill. It's another Friday afternoon. You are tuned to another episode of The Sod Show. In my company today is
Sophie Le Guill from Plant Heritage. So Plant Heritage is a membership organisation which covers UK and Ireland. Yep. The main vehicle of Plant Heritage is the National Plant Collection, so that's usually how it is known. So we have about 630 national plant collections in the UK, Ireland, and some Channel Islands as well. I don't know, national collections, maybe I should explain a bit more about them.
Yeah, please.
So national plant collections, basically, it is a collection of any plant group or a plant genus. So it can be anything from irises to hostas to something a lot more specific. And we've got collections of Proteas from southeastern Australia, for example. So usually collections are held by private individuals, but we also have a lot of collections in public parks or National Trust gardens, botanic gardens and things like that. So it's a wide mix of people, I would say.
Let me try and bring this down on a show that we've had on some time ago now, and that was when I interviewed Dermot Carey a couple of years ago when he was with Listerdale House. Listerdale House at the time held the largest collection of potatoes in the country, which was about 180 different varieties. Is that the kind of level that you're at, or is it, well, Jimmy lives in, let's say, Surrey or Norfolk, and he has 32, you know, of them plants over there that we like, and so long as they're of the same family, then that's considered it? Because I'm slightly vague on why there is an entire association set up to look after these collections of plants. So,
well, it's an interesting parallel, actually, because you can think about national painting collection. Usually you call a national collection of the National Gallery, for example. They have a national collection of painting. So if you think about plants, so collections labelled by plant heritage, we do have a proper status. So collections have a proper range of criteria that they have to adhere to. So they need to have a certain number of plants.
How many?
There is no limit, because it depends on what genus you have. Okay. If you have hosta, for example, you may need 1,000 plants, but if you have something much smaller, like, I don't know, very, very small genus, you may only need 2 or 3 plants. So collections can range from something very small to something very big.
Okay, so for those of you at home listening to this, essentially the genus is, let's say in this case, Donegan, and I'm one of 8 children, so including mom and dad, then there's a genus of 10 or a family of 10 Donegans, let's call it that for the minute, all right, okay. However, if, let's say, me and Sophie run away together and we only have one child, run with me here, this is about plants, folks, then we're a genus of 3. Is that bang on?
Yes, it is.
Lovely. Right. So now everybody at home understands what we're talking about, and you're smiling a lot. But in plant terms, one can have families that have literally thousands upon thousands. And in some cases, they can be also quite small as well.
They can be quite small. I mean, we are trying to encourage collections by breeder. For example, you could have a collection of, there is a collection here today, which is a collection of fuchsia bred by James Lai. And the maximum number of plants he's ever bred is like 40, 50 possibly. So the collection is going to be small by definition. You could also have collections which are limited by a certain period. So plants bred before the 1900s. Irises bred before the 1900s. So it wouldn't be a massive amount of plants. It would be a very specific range of plants.
Why you set this up? Because I'm gathering with regards to, let's say, for example, we take something like the Wildlife Trust. Well, that's to kind of encourage it, and it brings it in at the kiddies level and all of that kind of stuff. And you're kind of going, okay, well, that one makes sense. You're talking any of the tree councils, and you kind of go, right, well, we need more trees, and then there's protection of trees, right? Well, that one kind of makes sense. But I know in my head, I'm kind of speaking for the guy who, you know, I know I studied the heart side of it and all that, but I can hear the non-gardener mates of mine saying, but listen, I can get plants any day of the week down the garden. So what is your, I won't say your remit, but what's the reasoning for working so hard and having this association?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because we have collections both fruits. So, for example, we have collections of local apples, local pears. So varieties which were bred, I don't know, in Hampshire or that sort of thing. And usually those ones, people can understand the message because they have a local history, because they've been adapted to growing that particular area. So we have a collection of Scottish apples, for example, and they were bred for that specific climate. But it's a lot more difficult to convey the message for ornamentals. And actually, when you think about it, a lot of the ornamentals that we have nowadays didn't used to grow maybe 20 or 30 years ago. So climate change is happening, whatever you think about that issue as such. It is happening. We are seeing changes. And the idea behind National Collection is to make sure that we have sufficient diversity to fight against climate change. So if the summer gets drier, for example, you need plants who can survive with those conditions. Or if you get new diseases coming from somewhere in Asia, you need plants that can resist those diseases. So it's at the same time, it looks very friendly and big collections, pretty flowers. But there's also a scientific background to the collections, trying to make sure we preserve as much diversity as possible to make sure we will have plants for the future. Plants for our gardens.
Are you kind of, because so I know Brian was across with Q, and I think, you know, we got talking about the seed bank over there, and we came up again in conversation with Tim Entwistle from the National Botanic Gardens in Victoria, and we got talking about that again and the preservation of that as seed. But that's easy to do because I just put them in my freezer at home, which kind of makes perfect sense. However, in the plant kingdom, we all know that if I block out its light, that it's essentially eliminated one of the factors required for its growth. So it's tote dead, gone, bust, boom. Mm. And then also there are bad gardeners. My brain says two things. Number one, we get a new variety of, let's say, for example, strawberries come along, or that orchard is sold for development, and all of a sudden you realise that plant is actually now non-existent. Is there also an element of preserving what is existing?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, collections are both used as I've said before, they're living libraries, so they're not completely fixed. Some of the material in National Collections is being used in proper breeding, even some very large-scale breeding, and a lot of the material, there may not be showy plants that you can use straight away in your garden, but they may have interesting traits, so resistant to disease or resistant to a particular climatic problem, for example. So that they are used in both sense, both as a past and as the future.
How does a woman, a lady, in my case, I went and I studied horticulture and I did the Sochow Bingo, plants growing under my bed when I was 5 years of age. But you, on the other hand, end up working with a plant heritage association. In short, it's not your usual role to... When you turn around to your mates and say, well, I studied horticulture, well, all right, okay, where are you working? You go, not in any of the usual places where you might think I am working. Is that a fair way to put that? Do you see what I'm saying there?
Well, it's actually quite interesting because I studied proper botany at university. And when I found the job with Plant Heritage, what I thought was really interesting is the fact that it was trying to bring more science and more sort of knowledge into amateur gardening. And trying to make even just the normal amateur gardener understand the value of what they have in their back garden. Like plants that they have in their back garden can help fight climate change. Or not having concrete in their garden can help fight floods, for example. So it's really that the element that I liked is we have collections which range from botanic gardens to just private gardeners. We have a very simple back garden or just a conservatory, and they have a national collection in their conservatory, which I think is quite fascinating. So that's what drew me to the job.
Your accent is obviously very Irish, if you don't mind me saying.
I'm French.
I know that, I'm joking. What part?
Northeast of France, the borders of Luxembourg.
Okay.
Luxembourg and Germany.
But did you come across specifically for this job? Did you study in France? Did you study in the UK?
Well, I studied in Belgium. I actually studied botany in Belgium, and I was struggling to find a job over in Belgium. I moved to the UK with my partner, and I found a job really, really quickly over here. And obviously, I've been in the job for 4 years now, and I think I've managed to bring a different sort of angle to it, in addition to a more international angle as well, which is quite interesting.
Hey, there's two things here. Number one, we're obviously not going to run away together and you know, do the whole children genus thing. And on the more serious level, there are a lot of people, and you mentioned it, the domestic kind of angle. There are a lot of people I know at home who aren't great gardeners. No disrespect to them, but you know, it's very much kind of cutting the grass. Their plants are nice. They ring me, let's say, once every month. I drop out. We'll have a cup of coffee. We'll take a look. I'll do a bit of work, and it's fine. And it all looks good again, and it's pretty, and the plants are very well selected. But, you know, there are also mates of mine who don't have large budgets, who don't have vast, extravagant gardens, and maybe they're... I ask this question very as eloquent as I can, but maybe they're very simple to them. Gardens actually has a greater worth than they believe it has. Is it possible for like my mate John to become a part of? Can he join? Can he do something? What can he do to help?
Well, I mean, as a member of Plant Heritage, so we can take part in. We've got plant fairs. We've got local groups, about 35 local groups in the UK and Ireland as well, who run events ranging from plant fairs, talk, propagation groups, workshops, that sort of thing. But interestingly, we've launched something because we had a lot of people say, "Well, I would really love to get involved into conservation and." go that extra mile for plant conservation, but I don't have any space. I only have a balcony, I only have a very tiny rented garden, so I can't have any plants which are not in containers, for example. Yeah. And so we've launched something which is called the Plant Guardians.
Right.
And this is very interesting because you can register only one plant. So you can register more, obviously, but you could register one plant. That plant goes on to run sort of large register, and we know it's conserved. So you could have something on your windowsill, for example, a very nice, an aspidistra from the Victorian times on your windowsill, and have it safe because we have a record of it. This is often the problem, is we have there are so many great plants which have been bred over the centuries, but they disappear, they just fade away, and people have no idea where they are.
So right now, I'm in. And I genuinely mean that. I'd actually like to go to, I'd like to be a part of this now. I turn up to the next meeting, we'll call it next Saturday, for example. It's in your back garden, just for the moment's sake. I turn up on an average annual meeting, how many people, plant stalls will be there?
It really depends on the area. Again, it depends on how big it's going to be. I mean, we have plant fairs ranging from hundreds of stalls to much smaller one in village halls. So okay. It's a wide range of events. All the events are publicized online, so anyone can have a look and see what's in that area. As a member of Plant Heritage, you'll have a national membership. So if you go on holiday in Cornwall, you could, and you have a spare evening, you could go to a meeting over there. Right. So you have a national membership, which is really interesting. And obviously you also have access to all the national collections. So a lot of the time people say, oh, it's a national collection, they are experts, I've got stupid questions, I'm not going to contact them. But actually, collection orders, all they want is to share their knowledge, making sure if you have a question about hosta, just call the hosta collection order, ask them a question, and they're really welcome, that sort of sharing their knowledge, being able to share their knowledge.
I spoke to Rob Hardy there today, who is due up on the show, and I know with Rob, if I turned around and said that plant that I already know the name of, I've done that with it. There's no way in God's earth I would in any way feel it's everybody I've met involved with the Plant Heritage Association in every format of the word has always been, you know, how much more can I do for you rather than, yeah, so no, you shouldn't. All right, so let's get down to the crux of it. I've got €20, £20, whichever, in my back pocket. Is that enough to join?
That's the difficult questions. Individual membership is £28. But you do obviously get free access to plant fairs and things like that. So it's obviously a question of whether you can cost it into your membership as well. We also, as a member, you also have access to a plant exchange, which is a really fantastic but not enough publicized thing. So this is an annual plant exchange which happens at our annual general meeting, which is in a different county every year. And you can request as many plants as you want. So you can offer plants as well. If you have spare cuttings or anything, you can offer plants. And you can also request plants from it. And in the first year I took part, I got some really mature ferns out of it, which I had no idea about. I mean, they were obviously worth a lot more than my membership. So it's a bit of a, it's an interesting game to play.
That's what you're saying is I'll swap you my ham sandwich for your packet of crisps.
It's a national plant exchange. So we have a national coordinator who makes the exchange between interested people. So you can we get a list of offers, so people offer a lot of plants, and then you can request plants from that list. And if you are the only one to bid for them, for example, you will get that plant.
So what's, let's say there's two people bidding on it, do I have to offer, you know, two, you know, antirrhinums for your one, you know, whatever the case may be, what have I got beside me, an asplenium? Is that what I have to do?
Because
the other guy's offered one and I've offered two, and then he offers four, and then you offer six, and then all of a sudden I've lost a bid. Is it that kind of a bid?
No, it's not a bid, actually. So if you are the only person to bid for it, then you will get it. If there are more than one person, then what the coordinator will do, because the bids are by group, they will basically weigh it out, given the amount of plants that you've given and whether you've had one the previous year, for example, in the same group. So that's what they're going to do. But it's really interesting. And you can get some, there've been some trees put into it, for example. So you
But £28 for a year is like, for what the work you do and for the bit that you get out of it, that's like buttons, really. It's such good value.
Yes, it is. But it's I think the message of conserving plants is still difficult to get, whatever you will offer people. I think it will always be easier to, as an organization, to publicize saving foxes or saving fluffy dormouse, for example, than publicizing plants. And especially when we come from the angle of ornamental plants, because people say, we always say, well, there are plenty of flowers in my garden center, so why should I bother conserving or pay for conserving older ones?
But you've also got like the work that the RHS are doing and the whole Green and Great Britain thing that's happening, and it's starting to raise awareness. And again, I don't want to speak on behalf of anybody that I would know, but even I learned a couple of things from that and from talking to you today. And it's only when you talk to you, who is an expert, and you start to get that little bit of information back, and you start to kind of go, okay, I understand why this is happening. But it is amazing work that you are doing.
Well, thank you very much.
You're most welcome. I'd say it is hard work. What's the next step? What else is on the go for existing members or for non-members who are maybe thinking, well, I don't know about that bit, but I might like that bit?
We have a missing genera campaign. So that's something we've been launching, which is collections which you would expect would exist, like ginkgo or achilleas, verbena, which are pretty popular garden plants. So you would expect to have national collections, but actually we don't. So there are some missing collections. We've highlighted 10 today, but there are obviously a lot more. So anyone who's interested in having a collection, I mean, what we really want to do is show that it's not that difficult. It used to be a lot more complicated in terms of paperwork, but it has gotten more simple. And you don't need to have 1,000 plants to have a national collection. You could have a national collection with only 20 or 30. So we want to show everyone that it's not that difficult. It's just something that a lot of people can do.
All right, let's break this down. If you're listening to this in future in the podcast, the website is plantheritage.com. That's the first part. If you're stuck for any of the details and you're driving, you're walking, or you're out with the dog and you got your earbuds in, as you usually are, just at Sideshow on Twitter when you get back, or hit the show notes on sideshow.com and we'll put you in touch. You just search for Plant Heritage, two separate words, and Sideshow, and it'll all come up for you again, including this audio. If you want to get in touch with Sophie and ask her a question, you are on the Twitter thing if people want to get in touch.
Yes, I am on Twitter. I'm always on Twitter.
Yeah, what is it?
Oh, you want my name on Twitter?
Yeah.
It's S. Leguil. Oh, you may want to spell that.
So that's S-L-E-G-U-I-L. That's S-L-E-G-U-I-L. And again, if you're honest... It's a very nice greenhouse. Again, if you want to get in touch with Sophie and you're walking and you're out and about and you're unsure whether it's I before E except after C, just send us a note at Sideshow on Twitter. We'll put you in touch. Sophie, thank you so much for your time. On a serious note, a very genuine pleasure.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you as well.
There you go. It's plantheritage.com for all the details. Take my advice, folks. Serious, fine work. Go get in touch with them. And that was the wonderful Sophie Leguil. If you liked what you heard, or you're walking through the Cotswolds or somewhere shire, as Dylan, jeepers, I nearly got that one wrong, Dylan Moran would say, and you don't remember any of those details, sideshow.com, all the links and etc. will be up there. If you're listening to this in the future, like in about 4 months' time, and you don't want to scroll through eons and eons of sideshow.com, at Sideshow on Twitter, I'll put you in touch with Sophie and Plant Heritage, or send you the shit. Oh, my God. I almost did the Sean Connery, show Mr. Moneypenny. I almost did the accent, didn't I? I almost did it. Yeah. Caught myself out. I think that's just the bit of tiredness kicking in. Hold on one sec. Cup of coffee. Yeah, right. I better go. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. At Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow, not in a Sean Connery voice. And sideshow.com. That's it. Take care. Have a great weekend. Oh, God. And my thanks to Sophie and the team at Plant Heritage. Ladies and gentlemen, you are absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Well, and that's 23 hours too long.